Welcome to Inside the Studio, presented by iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Joe Levy. All right, I'm not sure what the weather is like where you are, but here in New York City, it is ice cold, it is December, and together those things mean it is time to heat up the cocoa and dig out the mini marshmallows, and also maybe listen to the new EP from this week's guest on the home edition of the show, country singer Mitchell Tenpenny. So his new record is called Neon Christmas, and the title track is about sipping some adult beverages by the warm glow of the lights in a dive bar when you can't get home for Christmas because you're snowed in. Of course, this year, if we're not home for the holidays, there really might be another reason besides the weather. And that's why we started the home edition of Inside the Studio, to let you know how the pandemic has impacted the lives of artists and how they're coping with life during lockdown. Mitchell told our quarantine correspondent, Jordan Runtog, that since he's stopped touring, he's returned to his roots as a songwriter. He's been writing more than he has in a long time, though with some socially distanced differences. He also talked about what it was like to record Christmas music during the summer and how a song he wrote in 30 minutes while having a couple of beers and waiting for a bachelor party to get going totally changed his approach to songwriting. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out the iHeartRadio podcast that Jordan hosts. It's called Rivals, Music's Greatest Feuds, and it is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guest today is a Nashville native who shot up the country charts in 2018 with his breakthrough breakup track, Drunk Me. He's had an extremely productive quarantine this year, releasing the songs Here, Can't Go to Church, a cover of Lewis Capaldi's Someone You Loved, and, most recently, Broken Up. Now, just in time for the festive season, he's here with a new holiday EP called Neon Christmas. It's a mix of Yuletide originals and old favorites, and I have to say, his funky slow jam arrangements and soulful voice have made this one of the smoothest Christmas collections I've ever heard. A commenter on Instagram wrote, "Have a very baby-making Christmas," and that pretty much sums it up. I'm so happy to welcome Mitchell Tenpenny.
Thank you so much for taking the time today. So great to talk to you.
Of course, brother. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, man. Well, Lord knows we all need a little extra holiday cheer after this year. What led you to decide to do a Christmas EP?
Yeah, man, I don't know. I've always just loved Christmas music. I've always been obsessed with it. Fall time and Christmas time is my favorite time of the year. It just gives me like this peace of mind no matter what's going on in the world, no matter what age.
Oh, totally.
So I don't know. When I hear Christmas songs, it always does that. So I've always wanted to do that. When I got the opportunity, it was important. So the last couple of years, we've been releasing a few songs. And then this year, we got to do four new ones. And two that I wrote, then two originals and then two covers. So yeah, man, I just love Christmas music. I always have.
Well, I'm a Christmas baby, so it's definitely like really resonates with
oh,
me.
Oh, nice, yeah. That's awesome.
Neon Christmas is such an evocative pair of words. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so Lindsey Rhymes and Matt Rogers, I wrote that with them. And it was that we actually wrote it outside in the summer. It was pretty hot. but I told Matt and Lindsey I wanted to write an up-tempo kind of Christmas song that you could see in a movie, essentially, like something that very, like you'd see in like Jingle All the Way or something with Arnold Schwarzenegger, something weird, but something that still was on brand for me. And Matt actually had the title Neon Christmas, and that was perfect. I was like, my brain immediately started going, it's like, all right, it's perfect. We get snowed in, we can't end up going out to do what our normal plans are, but we'll just hit the local dive bar down the street. And Because that's actually happened before, not snowed in, but like the flights got canceled. It was like, oh, we got nothing to do. Let's just go down the road and drink. So got to use some real life scenarios in that as well. And then play, you know, kind of make some Hollywood put in there as well.
Fire up that jukebox.
Right.
It beats doing the planes, trains, and automobiles thing of like, all right, let's actually just enjoy ourselves here. It's all good.
Absolutely.
I got to ask, what was the process of choosing some of the covers? I mean, did you sit down with like the Time Life Christmas Treasury and a pencil, or did you have songs in your mind that you knew for years that you really wanted to tackle and do your own spin on?
Yeah, well, Old Holy Night was definitely one of those that I knew I wanted to do ever since. That's just one of my favorite melodies of all times. It's so classic, and Mariah Carey doing it back in the day, I was just obsessed with it. And it's such a hard song to sing. So I definitely wanted one to challenge me on that. And so that was a fun one to kind of dive into and do. Same with Joy to the World. I just like, it was such a simple song, but I wanted to give it like a groove and make it something kind of different than you've heard before. Because it's like, these songs have been covered a million times, and that's why they are classics, but it's like the hardest part is making it different. And so like giving it a little groove and singing it on a different beat was kind of fun to kind of dive into. But these songs were just all songs that like, I was looking down a list of a bunch of Christmas songs and I started humming in my head and I was writing down things. And it just came to me immediately, like a melody or like, I was like, I'm in, this is the one I want to do. And a bunch of those songs are just because I was singing them in cars and church as kids and as a kid, just wanted to continue that.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask. So many people I know, their first musical experiences were like in the Christmas choir at church or in the nativity play or something like that. Was that the case for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Church. And then my school, we did plays and we sung Christmas songs every single year. And it'd be a Christmas performance. All the parents would come and the kids would do a bunch of carols. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming for sure.
One of the original tracks on the album, I got to say, one of my favorites, Naughty List. Just Christmas at your girlfriend's folks.
Yeah.
In separate rooms.
So it's funny.
Tell
we were
that. Such a great idea for
me, Jordan Schmidt, and Andy Albert, two of my best friends. I told them this was last year. I wanted to write a Christmas song. And it's actually a funny story because we went in to write Take Me Home for Christmas. And we started writing that song a little bit and ended up switching over. Someone said something about Naughty List and I was like, I want to do that. So that's how Dan and Shay's new Christmas song got written that we're on. We started writing the Take Me Home for Christmas and then we didn't finish that song, did Naughty List in the middle of it. Then Andy gave it to them and we all finished that song. So obviously that's just a side story of that. But Naughty List came from just kind of talking in between doing that first song. And then I was like, no, hold on, let's transition real quick. So we stopped writing that one and started writing Naughty List. And yeah, man, it was just a fun one to do. It's something about when we were just joking around and someone said that. And I was like, man, I have an idea, go with me here, of like, you know, the tape coming home for Christmas and having to change every single thing that you'd normally do in your real life because your parents aren't around right now. And just, you know, again, playing to what we like to do, not taking ourselves so seriously all the time. And you love the girl so much, you don't mind if you don't get presents this year. It's okay.
I was going to say, this begs the question, are you on Santa's naughty list or nice list this year?
I think I'm on his undecided at this moment list.
We got 6 weeks.
I've got some deeds I need to get done, some good deeds.
I got to ask, what is the coolest Christmas present you've ever received?
My Les Paul, man. My Les Paul. My very first. My parents put payments on that guitar. I was 13 years old, man, when I was really getting into it, and they knew I wanted it, and it was so funny. Like, my parents, you know, we already opened up presents, me and my brother, and my dad looks at me, he's like, did you get everything you want? I was like, of course, Dad, this is amazing Christmas. And he's like, you're lying to me, I can tell. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, it was amazing. He goes, go check under our bed. And I went in there and pulled it out, and it was that Gibson, you know, case, Gibson USA. And I just started freaking out, opened it up. And, man, for months after, I was just wanting to get home from school and this run and open that case. And I still got that guitar back there today. It's something that means more to me than almost anything.
Man, I'm sure. Gold top, flame top.
I got a gold top back there as well, but it's a classic vintage Sunburst. It's one of my favorites.
Music has been such a huge role in your life with your family. I know your grandmother was a huge legend in the Nashville community. I know your brother plays bass with you. Your mother's in the industry. Was there ever a moment when it you didn't think music would be your future?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought I was going to play sports, especially football. The doctor told me I was going to be like 6'3". Completely missed that by a long shot. I ended up being 5'10 on a good day. On a good day when my back's not hurting. But no, I thought I was going to play football. I went to college originally thinking I was going to do that and just didn't want to get up at 5 in the morning after playing music and drinking until 3 in the morning to go work out anymore. And my body just was like over it. And I was really getting into writing songs more and more. I'd been in a lot of bands before, but really getting into writing my own stuff. And I don't know, it just really, something switched in college freshman year and said, this is really what I want to do. And I never, you know, I never turned back from it since then.
Although I've seen you on Instagram. I saw you at like way beyond the half court, just sink basketball and like skeet shooting and like getting a bullseye and dart. You're still a pretty formidable sports talent, I got to say.
Thanks. I try, man. And this, there's just nothing to do right now. So it's so boring. I'm just out, you know, trying to be productive. And I don't know, you find a basketball on the ground and you throw it. That's what you do.
Have you been staying productive musically throughout quarantine? You feeling good?
Yeah, absolutely. Been writing a lot, and down here kind of locked myself in and then writing a lot of songs. Like before we, you know, signed a record deal and started doing the full-time artist thing, I was writing full-time for years, songs every single day. And so when I was on the road, I kind of got away from that. It's hard to write every day on the road. So it's been an easy transition getting off the road, even though I miss it like crazy, to get back to this lifestyle of writing every day, because I did it for so long. And I did kind of miss it. It has been fun to reconnect with a bunch of my writer friends and write every day and try to come up with something new every day. That was a challenge. But I'm definitely missing being on the road and being with my friends and my brother and my band. And yeah, man, it's a balance. But yeah, being productive as possible. I've written a lot of songs.
You know, Nashville is such a collaborative place. Has the lockdown and quarantine really impacted your songwriting style, or has Zoom been pretty good for that?
Man, Zoom. I've done a few Zooms. It's hard for me to Zoom write because I play off the room, and you know, as a guitar player, I can see a guitar in your room. Like, it's hard to hear it through Zoom, man. Like, especially if you're like getting melodies and stuff and talking over each other. Like in a room, you're supposed to talk over each other. You pull from it, but Zoom's tough. So we've done a lot of very safe, you know, writes in person where we're apart from each other, but you can still hear everything in the room. And been really productive like that, and kind of honed in our group of people where it's, you know, we just write with these people mostly, and we know where each other's been. It's been really easy to do that, and been pretty safe, and so far so good. We've made a lot of great music.
Recently on Instagram, you showed off this really complicated riff that you were saying you were going to start developing into a song. Are you a riff-based writer, or do you use words as a jumping-off point or a melody? What gets you hooked in going into a song, or is it different every time?
I'd say it's different every time, but I love riffs. I mean, so many things on my especially my first record were me coming in with a riff, and then, you know, you write so many songs like, I don't have any, I'm out of riffs, man, I'm out of all this stuff. So then it's like coming in with a hook for me. If someone has some idea that I've never heard, or if I've heard someone say something, then we'll start from there, build the chords around it, and then I'll try to come up with a riff later. But I just love interesting guitar parts, interesting chords. It always inspires me so much when I hear something cool that I haven't heard of in a while, and melodies start coming to me way, way easier than if I'm just hearing the same chords over and over again. So yeah, I love a good riff. You know, as a guitar player, once you hit that one, you're like, oh, this is cool. And you kind of put it in your book and you kind of save it for those writers, you know, that can kind of run with it.
When you were a kid, you met Bobby Braddock, legendary songwriter.
Yeah.
Did he, or any other legendary songwriters in the Nashville community that you met when you were just starting out, did any of those folks give you any advice that you still treasure to this day when you're composing?
The Warren Brothers were a huge, huge influence on me. They were the first big writers that ever wrote with me before I had a deal or anything. They were so kind. They actually co-signed me with Sony as my very first publishing deal because of a song we wrote. The first song we ever wrote, Keith Urban took and put it on hold at the time, and it actually got me my deal. And I did the demo for them, and I sent it out, and they were like, man, I want to keep writing. It was just one of those weird moments where I just got lucky. They got canceled on, and they'd always promised me if that happened, they would let me write, and they called me that day, and I canceled, and we went in the studio and did it. And so they've given me so much, you know, just value beyond just writing music, just the industry itself, you know, how to take care of yourself. You know, they lost their father too, like how to deal with that. And I mean, they're basically like big brothers to me, and I'll never take that for granted. They're amazing talent, but also just they've lived a lot of life, and they had a lot of advice for me through this entire time. And I love those guys.
You've said that Broken Up, your recent single, came in something like 30 minutes. Tell me a little bit about that, because as someone who doesn't write music like me, that seems like sorcery or something. How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, sometimes we overwrite songs. You get a bunch of songwriters in the room. It's like you get a bunch of English teachers in a room. You're going to write a book that like no one can read because the word, you know, because the words are just too profound or they're too perfect. So sometimes you need to go with your first gut, your first answer. And that's kind of what we did on that song. We were waiting for my buddy Andy Albert, who we wrote Naughty List with and a few other songs. It was his bachelor party. And so a bunch of us were getting together. We were going to go to Jeff Ruby's downtown to eat some steak and then go out afterwards. And so we downtown played again music, Dallas Davidson's place. My buddy Kyle has a studio in there and it's right next door. So we're all, let's meet up there first. And we were surprising Andy. He had no idea. So we met up there about an hour early. We were just waiting in the studio, having a couple beers. And I just sat down by the piano and Kyle was at his computer. I was like, I just recorded in something real quick, looped it. And then I was like, here, hand me the mic. And it was me, him, Devin Dawson, and Ernest K was in the room, or Ernest now, sorry, Keith. And I was like, let's, the first thing we say, I'm singing in right now. So each line by line, we'd write a line, I just sing it in on a SM7 like you're using right there. And I just sung it in, done, did the song in about 30 minutes, shut the computer down and went out and ate steak. And about a week later, I was like, dude, what did we do that now? Do you remember when you sent it to me? And I just really kind of dug it. It was one of those things that just kind of felt right. I ended up using the vocal that we sung that night for the record, man. It was just...
That
just
kind of vocal?
Yeah, just that vocal. I sung in just like that, one by one. And I think it came down to like our first guess of what we wanted to say there was probably right. Instead of overwriting a song and making sure everything's so perfect, how would you have said it in conversation? And that was kind of an eye-opening thing for us, how we write. We all started doing that a little bit more and written a lot of songs since that way of like kind of go with your first gut. Maybe edit a little bit after the end, but like your first gut's probably right.
There's something you said in an interview, you have to be vulnerable to stand a chance in this industry. I thought that was such a really interesting and great sentiment. I wanted to ask you more about that. Why do you think that's the case?
Because people will call your bluff real quick. I've found that out. Like they know for a fact if you're lying to them on stage, they know in your performance. And if you're honest and vulnerable with what you do, I think it garners more authentic attention because people have been there. People understand that, or they can put themselves in that story. I know personally me as a listener and the songs I fell in love with growing up, I fell in love with artists that were very vulnerable, very authentic. I mean, even from Usher to his Confessions down to Red Dirt Road from Brooks and Dunn, telling that whole story. You know, her daddy didn't light me up in my shackled up GTO. Like I worked on a GTO as a kid, and like those little moments that were like you could put yourself in is what I always wanted to do. And I think it takes a vulnerability of being honest to make people believe you when you're singing it to them.
I noticed something of a theme running through a lot of your songs. You teased a new song, Sleeping Alone, on Instagram, and your new single, Broken Up, Drunk Me, about breakup, Can't Grow to Church from earlier this year is another incredible breakup song as well. What is it that attracts you to breakup songs? What is it that you think that goes over so well with people?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't want to just write breakup songs. I have a lot, but for some reason, those have been the ones that my fans have gravitated towards for me is breakup songs, because maybe that's when you're the most vulnerable. Maybe back to the question, it's when you can actually admit some things in your life that happened and people have been there. You know, when you're happy, it's like anything. You don't really think why you're happy when you're happy. You just wonder why you're sad when you're sad. And I think that is a big part of like writers. It's easier to write a sad song than a happy song, because you just have so many emotions going at the same time. And so I think for breakups, it's like it's happened in so many different parts of my life, and every different part is completely different breakup. And so you have so much to live through that you have so much to pull through when you're doing a song, that to me it's very interesting when writing is trying to dive into that emotion that can actually grab someone real quick and pull them in. Whereas, you know, up-tempo, happy songs all the time, which I do love, you know, they give you a kind of instant emotion. They put you somewhere like that where these songs can grab you and pull you back in time. Sometimes, you know, these other songs are just background music for what you're doing right now, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, there's something that we all learn something when we're going through a breakup, and it always sticks with us. Whereas happiness, you're right, it's very ephemeral. It's just like you feel it and then it's gone.
Right, absolutely. Great word. That's absolutely right.
Well, on the flip side, you're dating Megan Patrick, another brilliant artist. Yeah. You're both usually on the road. It must be so nice to be able to actually spend a lot of time with one another now in lockdown. How is that?
It's honestly been great. We got to learn more about each other than we probably would in the next 5 years if we were living normal life. And it's been awesome. It's definitely made us closer and solidified everything that we thought we had going into this. But we're both ready to get on the road. We both are ready, man. We want to be out playing shows, doing what we love. I know her too, especially. I mean, her family's in Canada too and completely locked down, and she hasn't been able to see her family at all. And I know that's tough for her. And so music's always her escape in the world, you know, getting away from that. And so she can't see her family and she can't play music. It's tough right now. So we're just, you know, we're praying and hoping and being hopeful that soon we can figure something out to where we can get back out and take our minds off everything and play on stage again.
Yeah. Do you have the, I know you were set to play the Ryman in October, and that fell through. I know that's, you know, legendary venue. That would have been really cool. Is that, that on the books anytime in the foreseeable future or not yet?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to do it. That'll be where we start our next headlining tour when we can do it. It's just, yeah, it was that we could maybe do half capacity. And it was just, to me, that was such a special moment for us and our crew to play the Ryman. We wanted to do it right. We wanted to be completely full when we play it. And if we couldn't do it then we wanted to wait for it, because that's a moment since a kid I've been wanting to do. Being born and raised in Nashville, going to Ryman shows, to have my own headlining show there, we wanted to do it right. And so we will do it the second we can, the second it's safe, but we don't know exactly when that is yet.
What are you doing when you're not writing music or thinking about music? How do you like to unwind at home with the dogs or binge watching shows, or what do you like?
Yeah, love binge watching shows. We got really into Schitt's Creek, and Megan loves anything to do with murder. I mean, she's just so lots of that stuff. I'm a comedy guy. I like to go to bed with an ease in my heart, but she loves all these murder docs. We love to be outside. We love to hunt, fish, golf. I love golf. We got Megan into golfing this year a lot. And we just got mountain bikes, so we're starting to do a little bit of that. But yeah, anything outdoors. We just love being outside, and it's the perfect weather in Nashville right now. It's autumn. The leaves are beautiful, and the weather is just kind of perfect. So we're just enjoying time being outside.
Do you play music together a lot around the house, or when you, or is that work stuff? Is that kind of like no, that's things over here.
We that's just some, I don't know. It's, we show each other songs, and like she'll write a song, she'll come and play it acoustic in the room, and I love that. But we normally just don't. We do other stuff when we're together. I don't know. It's just not our first instinct to pick up and play. I know people think it's like, but like we're home, and it's just, I don't know. It's just a different vibe.
Oh yeah. No, I totally get that. That's a separate side of you.
Yeah.
I got to say, I've been loving your quarantine covers. You got Kings of Leon, Use Somebody, 1975, Chocolate. I mean, some great stuff. Any others on the way?
Yeah. But I mean, whatever. I just like, if I hear a song driving around that day and it's just been stuck in my head all day, and I get down here in the studio to edit, I'll be like, screw it. I want to do something real quick and do a cover. So I don't know. There's a bunch. There's so many cool songs coming out right now because everyone's so creative right now. There's just so much time. So I've been discovering more music than I ever have and trying to be inspired and writing really different stuff. You know, a little scared because, you know, we're in this country market and I love country music, but like I've been exploring with all different kinds of sounds and just different things to keep us inspired. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I said earlier you teased Sleeping Alone on Instagram. Is this sign of a new full length on its way, or is that still a ways off?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a little ways off because we definitely want to be able to tour this record. But we've got a lot of songs, and we've been cutting a lot of songs. I think we've already cut 11 so far, and we'll overcut a little bit, but I want a record with 14, 16 songs on it. When we come out with this next record, I want a lot of songs on it. So we're cutting a lot, we're writing a lot, and Sleeping Alone will definitely be on that. It's one of my favorite songs in a while, and the way we did the production on it, it's going to be really cool. It's rock and roll. We did a big drums, which I love because I come from that rock and roll, hardcore emo scene, Warped Tour days. So I kind of incorporated that a little bit on this song. It's pretty cool. We'll see.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, your early days, you were like a hardcore punk guy. Like, what brought you back into the Nashville natural fold.
You know, you're a teenager. You run away from a little bit. You come back home, the prodigal son, right? I think a lot of people in Nashville did that. I call it farm emo, because so many kids from Warped Tour are now in here, Nashville, writing country songs, and it's awesome. And honestly, they're all amazing writers and all having lots of success because it was great melodies back then. They really were. These are rock songs, but these melodies are incredible. And now it's just incorporating that with a more country lyric and. It's pretty cool to see, man. A bunch of my friends that I all had the jet black swoosh hair and the tight jeans, just like me. We're all riding country songs together now, so it's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I had all the Taking Back Sundays. Stuff. Absolutely
love that, man.
You said you're listening to different kinds of stuff now. What are you listening to right now?
Yeah, more. I mean, just got back to listening to a lot of rock and a lot of syncopated drum bass stuff. You know, and even stuff like the 1975, just weird. Ambient tones, you know, they do a lot of jump back to the 80s stuff, but a lot of synth stuff that's really cool. There's so much technology, man, and so many new plugins that you can play with sound wise like on your keyboard, that is just so interesting, like that we didn't have growing up. It's unlimited, and so it's so cool to sit down every day, play something on your keyboard that's completely different from what you've heard. And I don't know, there's something inspiring about that, where you hear something new and you just kind of run with it, and whether you know if it's good or not, you just got to kind of take off and see what happens at the end.
Oh man, that's so exciting. When you finish a track, when you got it mixed down, and is there a way that you like to audition it? Like, do you get in the car and crank it up and drive it just to hear what it sounds like? Is that what you do?
That's my play every time. When I get it mixed back, I get in my truck and I drive and I listen to it 5 times. That's my office. I crank it. Yeah, that's it. Because that's where people listen to music.
Yeah.
You know, they listen to it in their headphones or their cars. And so I want to make sure that the vibe's right when you're driving, with the noise on the road, with the windows down. What is it sounding like? Because I can make it sound awesome in the studio or in a bigger studio with monitors. But what's it sound like there? And then I always listen to it on headphones, little cheap headphones, because, you know, that's what people listen to. You spend, you know, so much money in the studio and all this stuff, and it's going to be listened to on $10 headphones. So you gotta play for that as well. But yeah, it's my go-to is getting in my truck the second I get it, drive around, crank it up.
I think it's what Brian Wilson used to do with all the Beach Boys tracks. He knew all those songs, you know, especially the car songs were going to be played in teenagers' cars. So he brought a car speaker into the studio, and that was his last test, was just to play it through that.
Yeah, I got a boombox up here that runs too. That I have the studio speakers here, but I can switch over the monitors and just hear the mix on a boombox. So it takes away all the lows, a bunch of the mids. It sounds like crap is what it sounds like. And that's what you kind of want, because it kind of gives you a complete perspective. You got this really good monitors and then it sounds like crap. So you're like, okay, I can adjust a few things here that I'm not hearing in the really good monitors, because, you know, that's how most people listen to music. Including myself, I listen to it on car speakers and headphones.
Oh man, Mitchell, we can't wait to hear more of what's coming. My last question, I've been asking everybody this, and it's so interesting to hear all people's different responses. If you could snap your fingers and have everything go back to normal, whatever your definition of normal is, say this time last year, what would be the first thing that you would do?
Really soak in being on stage. Really soak it in, what's happening when people are singing back your song and engaging with you. When you lean down and touch a hand walking down the catwalk. You know, those are things that you dream of as a kid, why you put posters on your wall, why you fall in love with music. And when it happens so fast. When Drunk Me came out and we kind of took off, you know, these things were so out of the normal for us, but it was happening so fast, we weren't really soaking it in as much as I thought I was. Until it's taken away from you. Thinking about meet and greets, thinking about touching someone's hand again, thinking about seeing a crowd sing back to you is something I never realized how much I missed, even though I wanted that more than anything in the world. Does that make sense at all?
Absolutely.
It's such a crazy thing to think of. You got everything you wanted, but when you got it, you weren't aware. And now I'm fully aware that I got everything I wanted, and I want it back.
That's a great answer. Mitchell Tenpenny, thank you so much for your time and your music. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you, Jordan. You're the man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio Home Edition, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio and other shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.